Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Love in the court. Terrific pass. And Kevin Love knocks down a corner three. They gave Irving space, and he has been great from deep. And off James on that drive pitch to J.R. Smith, who continues his three-point shooting. Jennings Frye hits the three from the corner. He has been such a difference in the acquisition from Orlando late in the season. Love comes to the corner. Air ball the last one. All net on this one. And Love's got two threes in a row. They switch it here, and Love hits his fourth three. Shumpert out of the corner. And Iman Shumpert makes it 10 three-pointers made again. James hits the three. LeBron's first three-point hit.
Schroeder to the basket. And Lally! James cuts to the basket. He's blocked again. This one's going to be a goaltend.
Oh, boy. Now, that was a very deceptive play.
Shot clock at two. James jab. Shumpert. Got it. LeBron. Been the hot man. Will he go for the win? Schroeder to the basket. Turned away. James pulls it away. Jump ball is called. 8 inches to James, who wins the tap. It goes to the corner. Horford tries to get to it. The three is on the way. Millsap is off. And it's over. And the Cavaliers have swept the Hawks.
I know these guys have been waiting for this opportunity to be in the postseason again after what happened last year, you know, with their injuries. And, so they've been building up towards this, both mentally and physically. And obviously I can't say that I haven't waited for them as well, you know, to get them back to this moment so I could be out there with them. Because it's something that we all envisioned when I came back, when Kev was traded here, and obviously Kai was already here. So we just, you know, we're in a great rhythm right now as far as us three. You know, we know exactly where we want to be on the floor. We know exactly where we are on the floor. And it's benefited all of us individually. Now, obviously, it's trickled down to the team.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. Welcome to the extravaganza. I apologize in advance for the raspiness you may be hearing in my voice right now. Battling through a spring cold that seems to come every time we get warm, then cool, and then warm, and then cool again. But I'm fighting through it, and I'm glad to be here with you, and I appreciate you joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. How about that? The Cavaliers are now a ridiculous, unfathomable, inexplicable 12-0 against the one basketball team, against the Atlanta Hawks. One franchise is 12-0 against another franchise all time in postseason meetings. Two straight broom jobs for the Cavaliers, four for the Pistons, four for the Hawks, now sitting and waiting for the Raptors and the Heat to figure out who's going to get dusted in the Eastern Conference Finals. And it's on that note that we say, welcome to the extravaganza. Indeed. Yeah, and I will say this, somebody called me out almost immediately on Twitter. And if you follow us on Twitter, then you saw this already. If you don't follow us on Twitter, then you should follow us on Twitter. Sports Radio 106.5 is where we tweet from. Sports Radio 106.5. Also, Facebook 106.5 The Ticket. But you heard Friday's show. You heard me. You heard Dennis Manilow. You heard, primarily the two of us. And I can't remember what Ben and Chris were saying about this or not. But first of all, let's back up a little bit. After what happened last Wednesday when the Cavaliers set that ridiculous record with 25 three-pointers, it was just something you're never going to see again, right, in Game 2? I said on Friday, Thursday and Friday, really, the off day and then Friday before they played Game number 3, I said I have a bad feeling about Game 3. And I said, and the reason why is because of basketball. It's just the nature of this beast. It's the nature of the NBA. The basketball gods giveth, and the gods taketh away. And when they giveth you that kind of heat from distance for as long and as many players who had it in one game, generally speaking, they taketh away. Shots that were dropping in game two were going to rim out in game three. Open looks that were there in game two are going to be suddenly contested more in game three. It's just basketball. It happens time and time and time again. And I had a sneaking suspicion the Cavaliers would go cold in game three and lose game three. If they were to lose a game in the series, that would be the game. So I had Dennis Manilow on the show on Friday to do a little preview of game three. And I said to Dennis toward the end of the show, if you were listening around 4:45, 4:50, somewhere in that neighborhood on Friday, you remember this. And I said, Dennis, make me feel better. He said, what do you mean? I said, make me feel better about game three. I just can't shake this suspicion that the basketball gods are going to take away what they gave away in game three. In what they gave away in game two. In game three, they're going to take it back. All of the heat, all of the perfect stroke, the confidence and everything else, they're going to shoot poorly and perhaps lose to a motivated Hawks team at home in game three. And Dennis said to me, and I'm paraphrasing it, I wish I could, but I can't make you feel better because I think it would be a lie for me to do that. And not only that, I say, this is what Dennis said, they're going to lose game three and game four in Atlanta and come back to the queue for a game five dead even at two. That's what his prediction was. And I said, bro, you're kidding me. There's no way they're losing two in a row. But I can see just the sheer odds of it all, just the sheer, in basketball history and basketball. And this is going back to Twitter now, as I said. Somebody called me out right away over the weekend, and it was, let me see. Somebody tweeted to me or at me about this. Bob F. called it. This is from somebody named Life Goes On. Bob F. called it. Cavs didn't shoot the three all that well. Only 21 threes in game three. Shut up, Cushlin. Only 21 threes in game three. And then we all saw what happened in game four yesterday. Only 16, which is still insane. Channing Frye with 7 in game three. Kevin Love with 8 of them in game four. And that guy just hit me and said, right. Yeah, wait, good prediction there. And my response to that, which I'll repeat on the radio, was, yep, you're right. They did defy all basketball odds and all the rules by staying hot from three, not only for one more game, but for two more games. And in the process, setting records for the number of threes taken, and I'm sorry, hit, I should say, in a series. Setting records and shooting an incomprehensible 51% from three for the series.
That's nasty.
I mean, Steph Curry, widely regarded as the best shooter in the world, the record holder with 402 threes made in a season, breaking his own record of, 268? He beat his own record by like 130. He doesn't shoot 51% from three. Nobody shoots 51% from three, let alone an entire team for four games shooting 51% from three. So I'll own my wrong prediction, gladly and happily, to know that it was wrong. But I'll say this, as I said the tweeter who hit me like that, I'll say this though. I still believe in that sort of basketball karma. I didn't invent the phrase live by the three, die by the three. I don't own that. If I did, I would have trademarked it and made myself a bundle every time somebody used it. That saying has been around for a long, 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 long time. Decades, in fact. I don't know exactly how many because I can't remember exactly when the three-point line came into existence. Not that it matters too much. But that saying has been around since long before this series and long before I said it. But I stand by it, and it exists for a reason, because it's true. It's true. When you live by the three because you're red hot and become dependent upon it, sooner or later, you're going to die by it because you were dependent upon it. And like, just because of the nature of the shot, being the lower percentage shot that it is, if you become dependent upon it and go cold, you lose. And the Cavaliers have become so dependent upon it. Now, to their credit, they haven't had any reason not to be dependent upon it in this series, particularly from game two on, because of that red hot streak that they're on. Now, there's probably never going to be another game in which everybody is hitting as incredibly high percentage as they did in game two. But they can at least rely on one or two guys to be ridiculously hot. At least that's how it has been. You know, everybody was hot in game two, especially J.R. Smith, who had 7 three-pointers. Then in game three, not everybody was as hot, but at least one guy was. Channing Frye had 7 three-pointers. And then in game four, not everybody, LeBron was 1 for 5, I think, from three. JR was only like 1 for 4. Did he really only take 4 yesterday? I might have to look that up again. I'm going back off of memory. But anyway, and it was Kevin Love, who was 8 of 15 from three. Now, let's break that down a little bit. As the Cavaliers, who have swept 2 straight series now, 8-0 in the playoffs, get ready for nothing. They're going to have literally a week off, at least a week off, because game one of the Eastern Conference Finals may begin as early as Sunday.
Actually, so I have that info because I clicked on this because I was searching for it late last night, and I brought it up just now, Bob, because I knew this would come up at some point. How long are they going to be off? They've already released 2 contingencies. It's based on if Miami-Toronto goes 6 or less,
right,
or if it goes the full 7.
And if it's 6 or less, it's Sunday, and if it's a full 7, it's Tuesday.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think Sunday's a day game. It would be the
Sunday would be an afternoon game, yes. If it's Sunday for game one, as in this coming Sunday, the 15th, that would be an afternoon. The rest would be an evening. Incidentally, no matter which possibility it goes for, games 3 through 7 are fully set. 21st, 23rd, 25th, 27th, 29th. It's only how do they arrange games 1 and 2 depending on the other series.
Got it. Excellent. And that is good to know, to have that all laid out. But going back to the point now, just to use Kevin Love as an example, this is not picking on K-Love, by the way. This is just to make a point. Kevin Love was 8 out of 15 from 3. He was 2 out of 10 from 2. That goes for all the Cavaliers as a team, Kush, because the Cavaliers shot 51% from 3 for the series, as we just pointed out, which is just blah, blah, blah. You can't wrap your brain around that. It doesn't happen, right?
Right.
That is, by the way, what the Cavaliers have done in 8 postseason games, I heard Windy talking about this morning on Mike and Mike, Brian Windhorst, who covers the Cavaliers for ESPN. Don't forget, listen to Mike and Mike each and every day right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Windy said that the Cavaliers' 8-game performance in 3-point shooting thus far in these playoffs, postseason basketball with postseason intensity and postseason defense, and don't think for one second that the Hawks didn't play good defense. Don't think for one second that the Pistons didn't attack the Cavaliers and play good defense. They did. But they're shooting from beyond the arc in these last 8 games, all told, according to Windy, was better than any 8-game stretch that the 73-win Warriors had in this record-setting season. Better than any 8-game stretch that the Warriors, who are the 3-point kings of the NBA, with shooters like Steph and Klay Thompson and Iguodala and Draymond and whoever else they got out there just stroking, and Harrison Barnes, and that this group, the Cavaliers, who aren't supposed to be made up of shooters quite like that, literally outperformed the Warriors in any 8 games that they did all year. So let me get back to the other stat that is of great importance here. And I know that's early in the week. I mean, because we have over a week, well, about a week to talk about this, since they don't play again until Sunday at the earliest. Some of this might get redundant, but we got to get it out there. The Cavaliers in this sweep, and quite frankly, well, yeah, let's just say this sweep, because this is the one they were 51% in. In this 4-game sweep, that 51% from 3 was a higher shooting percentage that they had not just from 2, but, Jim, it was higher than their shooting percentage in the paint.
That's crazy to think about.
And that's where the shooting percentages are at their highest. That's when guys, you know, like Andre Drummond and guys who are leading the league in close to leading the league in field goal percentage, 63%,
68%. They're usually always big men because they're right around the basket.
Big men are dunking and laying it in and getting putbacks and tip-ins and all that stuff. That is exactly right. The Cavs shot better from distance than they did from the paint. So, what am I trying to say? Am I trying to be Debbie Downer here about the future? Absolutely not. I'll tell you something else. I heard some ESPN guys talking about this morning. They were asked, are the Cavaliers now the favorite to win the NBA championship, even over anybody in the West? And at least two answers were, yes, they are. And the qualifier there being, right now, based on how everybody looks right now, knowing and acknowledging that the two opponents the Cavaliers took out in sweeps in the Eastern Conference were not exactly the best the NBA has to offer, taking out the Pistons, the eighth seed, and then a Hawks team that is just quite frankly completely overmatched against the Cavs. They just are, they're a bad matchup. They just don't have it. 12-0 says so in the playoffs. Everybody acknowledges that, but it's not just beating those teams in eight straight in these two straight sweeps. It's how they are playing together. It's how they look. It is the incredible dominance of the big three from a scoring perspective. Plus, if any one of them being off, if any one of them is off, getting the explosive offense from other pieces and parts like J.R. Smith, like Channing Frye, and of course, the ridiculous relentlessness of Tristan Thompson, continuing to keep possessions with offensive board after offensive board, that they are the favorite in the NBA. The argument against the Spurs being what we're seeing right now, they are locked in a battle. 2-2, I want to talk more about this game later. 2-2 in the battle with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Kevin Durant went MVP mode last night in Game 4. So they split the two there. I predicted, going out on a limb, I admit it, on Friday. I said, this is a very strange call for me, but I think the Thunder are actually going to win both at home. And you know what? They were in position to. They had a shot at it. Russell Westbrook made some terrible decisions, particularly in the fourth quarter for the Thunder, but they were within a whisper of doing what I said and winning both games in OKC and going back to San Antonio up 3-1. But as it stands, it's 2-2. So both of those teams have obviously, you know, shown some of their warts against one another. San Antonio is a phenomenal team, and Kawhi Leonard is a phenomenal player. But you know what? Even them, if you look at the way they have performed to this point, compared to the way the Cavs have outplayed either one of those teams, which brings us, of course, to the Warriors, the defending champions who beat the Cavs in the finals. And the argument went, and I agreed with it, that without Steph, we just can't say for sure that this Warriors team is the favorite to win the title. We know Steph will be back, but we don't know how he'll perform on a knee that may still be bothersome. We don't know if he'll be thinking about it a la Derrick Rose and not exploding with it. We don't know what his performance is going to be like and how they're going to regroup playing without him for the last, this will be what? He's not going to play tonight. He's not going to play in Game 4 tonight, they have said. So that's four in this series. He missed, what, the last two of the opening series?
Right.
So that's six games without a minimum. Minimum. And if Portland wins tonight and it's 2-2, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. All of those circumstances being taken into account, that the Cavaliers might indeed be the favorite to win the title. My response to that is, however, only when they show me that they can indeed win with bread and butter basketball and not the current flavor of the day, which is just start jacking them from three. Show me that when that well goes dry, as it does for everybody at some point. Again, hence a cliche that has been around since longer than I have. You live by the three, you die by the three. When that well runs dry and we don't have somebody crazy hot, can you win with traditional two-point basketball? Going to the basket, using offense, using back cuts, getting post-ups, doing things that way. Because I promise you, the Thunder can, and the Spurs can, and the Warriors, well, I don't know. They're the exception. They're the exception, because I don't think I've seen them have to do that. But even, you know, we'll see about that. But the point being, that's the caveat there. We have to see how they can play if indeed that, you know, when not, it, and it is a matter of when, not if, when that well runs dry and the red hot shooters cool off a little bit, and now you got to win the game a different way. So that's where I am with what happened over the weekend with the Cavaliers in the NBA postseason, sweeping the Hawks after sweeping the Pistons. We are still going to talk a little bit more about that Spurs and Thunder series too, which is just phenomenal. Terrific. It's every bit as good as I'd hoped it would be. It's 2-2, and it's going to go to 7. And I'm going to be really disappointed for one of those teams when they lose it. And I'm going to be really thrilled because I like them both. And I'm going to be really thrilled, for the winner. And I really do hope it's Oklahoma City. I like them both, but I'm pushing for Kevin Durant because I think Kevin Durant just deserves a chance to get back to the finals. And then I would root for him like crazy over Steph and the Warriors if it came down to that. All right, Kush, thoughts on any of that before we move on?
I mean, that's an interesting point, you know, about the threes and everything, because you're right, these things are ebbs and flows in terms of percentages. A Cavs fan will remember from last year's finals that guys like J.R. Smith just went completely cold, so these things do tend to happen. I have a little more faith that they'll do fine going forward, at least especially against the Eastern Conference. You got Miami and Toronto all kinds of banged up, especially in their big men categories right now. But yeah, if they're in a position where the threes aren't hitting, they're going to have to obviously be able to get to the basket and get some mid-range things like that. I think they're capable, you know, of doing those things. As for the thinking that they would drop one or two, because I remember those conversations midweek last week and beyond as well, especially starting right after the ridiculous game two that they had. The only reason that I had disagreed with you, and if you'll recall, I said, oh, this is going to end up being a sweep, because to me the caveat was, the Hawks just looked defeated, and they tried some things in game 3 and 4. You know, they had Cephalosha starting. Kyle Korver was off the bench. He had a solid game 3. He was a no-show again then, you know, in game 4. And, of course, the Cavs, you know, kept draining the shots. I mean, we're sitting here laughing yesterday in the clinchers. Only 16, like it's some kind of a slump the way they've been shooting, you know. But I didn't think that they would have any problems because they just match up so well, apparently, you know, against the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, regular season and postseason, they are undefeated against that team going back to game 1 of last year's East Finals. At some point, if you're that team on the 0-for end, that starts getting in your head, and I think we saw that at times. But you're right, they did play well, better in those two games in their building, and actually, quite frankly, they had chances, much like the Pistons did in the first round series. They had chances in 3 of the 4 games. The only one they didn't have a chance in was that crazy game 2, which the Cavs led by as many as 40. But they did have chances, you know, to pull those out. They came back and led by as many as 9 before a 19-point edge in the fourth quarter in game 3. And then yesterday they led by double digits. At one point, I think it was 12, which was their biggest lead at any point in the series. And then they came back from 18 down in game 1. But what interests me more going forward is the fact that even though there's, you know, asterisks like the injuries from last year, and regardless of the opponents in question, for what it's worth, when the big three is out there, LeBron, Love, and Kyrie, this team is 12-0 in playoff games. Just throwing that out there. And at the same time, I'm just personally hoping going forward, Bob, forget NBA gods and Carmen things, and eventually they won't shoot as well. I'm just, the only thing that's crossed my mind in a humorous kind of way is I hope there's no random deja vu about to happen, because we did see the same script literally in 2009. They swept the Pistons in round 1, then swept the Hawks in round 2 before they got Stan Van's Magic team, and we know what happened with
that
one. I don't think that's going to happen this year because that Orlando team was healthy and better.
Let me tell you one thing about that.
It's just an interesting dynamic, that's all.
No, it's not. It's stupid. It's a stupid dynamic because there's such a difference. different team. It is such a completely different team with different management, with different players, with different everything. I mean, I understand your point. It's just one of those. It's a trivia question more than it is to be a dynamic. The Hawks deal, though, Jim, about predicting that sweep, to me, it wasn't about the fact that they were defeated or felt defeated. It wasn't the fact that the Cavs were in their head. To me, it was just the fact that the Cavaliers have at least three of what they don't have, and that's a closer.
Yep.
Those games that you pointed out that the Hawks came back and actually had fourth-quarter leads late in the second half of the fourth quarter with under 6 minutes to go, those games required a closer. The Cavs have them. The Hawks do not. It is the one thing that is going to continue to frustrate them and stop them from ever being able to play and beat the Cavaliers in the playoffs. They don't have a closer. They have a nice team of star-caliber players. They do not have a single superstar, and that's going to have to be their mission, is to go to find one. All right, we're going to get a timeout here because we got to get to make some room for Rick Nolan. Rick Nolan is going to be joining us to break down the NBA playoffs, including the sweep, with his thoughts on all of that. Also, the Thunder and the Spurs. And guess what? There is still a matter of the Eastern Conference. Cavs have to find an opponent, Heat and Raptors. Raptors up a game. We'll talk a little bit about that with him. And then, by the way, coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, just a little preview for you, is Brad Ausmus already on the hot seat? You could argue he started the season on the hot seat since, you know, new general manager. Wasn't his guy. He had a choice. Avila had a choice to keep him or not. He said, let's keep him. But they are struggling, and there are already rumors swirling that Ausmus is in the crosshairs. What does all of that mean? We're going to talk to Aaron McMahon about that from MLive.com, who wrote a very interesting piece as Victor Martinez, among others, got very, very angry with the suggestion that Ausmus might pay the price for their own struggles on the field. So that's coming up at 4:05. So if you're a Tigers fan, stick with us. We'll talk about that. But basketball next with Rick Nolan right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, I second that emotion. Make sure you get to the webpage, 1065theticket.com, and indeed, podcast the programs. Download anything and everything that you may have missed, any conversations, any interviews or segments, or if, you just can't listen during this time and you want to listen to it tonight, it's all there for you, 1065theticket.com. Kyrie, after the game, emotional and excited.
The Hawks gave you everything they had. They wouldn't quit, but you guys wanted it more. I see the emotion right now, mentally, physically. What did this one take?
It means a lot. I mean, that was a hell of a series. Just coming to Atlanta, they didn't give us anything, and that's the type of test that you want in the playoffs, and that builds character for us, and going into the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, it's just a load of confidence. I mean, that's a heck of a ball team down there, and well coached by Mike, and they gave us everything they had, especially tonight, and just give credit to them.
It's easier to see on the video rather than the audio that you're hearing right now, the emotion on Kyrie Irving's face. And boy, you could just tell it means a lot to him. This means a lot more to him, obviously, since he wasn't able to play in the finals last year. He wants to get back there so bad, or at least he wasn't after game one. He wants to get back there so bad and get an opportunity. Two straight sweeps, and they are indeed well on their way. Joining us now to talk a little NBA playoffs is, of course, the outstanding beat writer covering the Cleveland Cavaliers, frequent guest on this program, which is, of course, to our great benefit, and it's certainly deserving of our appreciation. Rick Nolan joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Rick, how are you, bud?
Doing great, Bob. Yourself?
Oh, wonderful. Not as good as Kyrie and the Cavaliers feel right now, but if you're a Cavs fan or supporter, man, this is something that, Rick, I said to you earlier today off the radio that sometimes it's fun to be wrong. I was wrong, and I'm so glad to have been so. I just kind of figured there's no way a team that is as hot as they were in Game 2 cannot feel, the pinch from that. Basketball history and the basketball gods, they giveth and they taketh away. And when they give you that much heat in one game, usually you go cold shortly thereafter. But my gosh, 25 in Game 2, 21 threes in Game 3, and then 16 more yesterday. This is an unprecedented run of shooting by this basketball team.
Yeah, 77 in four games. And I think if you go back to the Detroit series, I think to have three of the top five or six all-time three-point shooting games in playoff history. So, yeah, you are correct. Unprecedented. But, Bob, it's to the point now where, we can say what happens when they go cold, but they're getting such great looks that you almost expect them on a bad night to make 35% of them. I mean, they made close to 50% in the Atlanta series, which is mind-boggling. But there are great looks, and they're, you know, other than chasing the record in game two against Atlanta, that they've been looks within the flow of their offense. It's like it's natural now. And they're still getting some attacks to the hole, and everything's coming off of that. So, you know, I'm normally cynical by nature, but I think there's enough really good shooters on this team that I think it's a pace that they can almost continue 17, 18 a game throughout the rest of these playoffs.
Wow. Now that's a bolder prediction than my prediction. They would go cold. I mean, and you're right. I'm usually cynical too. I'm also, I don't even know if I want to say cynical. It's just, I'm a realist, and I'm looking at what history has shown. And history has shown that teams that get that hot can't stay that hot that long, especially, you know, a team like this, which wasn't one of the top two or three three-point shooting teams as this season went on. In fact, I think they were tied for seventh in three-point percentage. Not that that's bad out of a 30-team league, but, you know, they're not the Warriors. They don't have or haven't had that being such a major part of their offense the way it suddenly is in the postseason. And what concerns me, Rick, is when that well does run dry and they do go cold, are they going to be able to run the traditional offense and get them 2 points at a time, especially when you look at the fact that in this series, we talked about this last segment, Brian Windhorst said it this morning, they were 51% in the series from three,
right,
which is
right,
higher than they were in the paint. They're missing...
Yeah.
Missing their close chippies, which are supposed to be the high percentage ones, more often than they miss the threes, and that's my worry.
Yeah, the thing that, you know, the flip side of that though is it's not just one guy or two guys or even three guys that's making them. It's JR, it's Kyrie, it's Channing Frye, it's Kevin Love, it's even a little bit of LeBron. I don't think they're all going to suddenly go ice cold, and it is their offense. It's a large part of their offense. It's been that way since shortly after the All-Star break, actually. They get these shots without, I think, even planning to get them. It's just the way they space the floor and the way they attack. I'm not super concerned that they're suddenly going to go, you know, 7 of 33 in a game. They're just playing so well in many different ways that the 3 points are kind of almost happening off of all that. There could be a game when you go real bad and nothing falls for you, but you can say that for anybody. And you know, you look ahead to who they play in the finals, assuming it's still probably going to be Golden State. You notice how I just skipped right over the Eastern Conference finals
there? Oh, my goodness, yes.
It's like, that's like just four to five games that they have to play to get to the finals, basically, in my mind right now. And I don't know how you can look at it much different. But if they play Golden State in the finals, you know, you have two teams that are three-point reliant. And I just think it'll be an unbelievable series. I hope it comes to fruition. Babble too long. Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, I want to talk about the West and what that's going to look like here, especially given the way this Thunder and Spurs series is going, which is exactly how I thought it would and hoped it would. Deadlocked at two, really, really two very good teams. And obviously the Warriors will await one of them once they finish off Portland. And we'll talk about Steph and his injury and all that again. But back to the Cavaliers briefly about the way they were able to get these threes, Rick, and the way they were able to shoot in space. Mike Budenholzer, the coach of the Hawks, was so frustrated, and he said, look, I want people to know something, he said after the game yesterday. Our defense was not bad. He said,
no,
our defense played well. We had guys where we wanted them. For people who just think we let this team come in here and we have no defense and they just shot wherever they wanted, he said, no, it's not true. We played good defense, but that's how good they were. Do you buy that?
I do. I'm going to write a column as soon as we hang up here today. I'm still struck by something LeBron said at the podium after Game 3 on Friday. It was at the very end of his press conference, and he kind of just said it so matter-of-factly that I think some people looked right past it or had already tuned out and started working on their stories. But to paraphrase what he said was something very close to the effect of, we are a team that's destined for greatness. I truly believe that we're on a mission. And those three sentences were something we never heard from LeBron during the postseason last year. Everything was a process in building. That told me that he is fully confident that this team is playing the kind of basketball it needs to play, that has the togetherness, the chemistry, the mindset, even the physical toughness, that this is the year. I think he truly believes that this team can and will win a championship.
Yeah, I did not hear that, but I agree with you in your assessment of it as you describe it, and I think that is how he feels about it, and I think they probably all feel like this is almost something that they're due, given the fact that they couldn't pursue it last year when they were first assembled as a group. Not that it's the same exact group, because the addition of someone like Channing Frye has made a big difference in this thing, but that LeBron and Love and Kyrie kind of feel like, hey, they owe us, they meaning, again, those mythical basketball gods, they owe us this. We had an opportunity to do this last year, and it was taken from us by injury, and, you know, guess what? We're here now, and we're here to claim what's ours, and that is a mentality that, you're right, I have not heard them expressed before. I haven't heard LeBron express before. I just played that clip from Kyrie in postgame after yesterday about how emotional he is. I mean, these guys really feel like something extraordinary is almost their destiny.
Yeah, and you know, you look at a guy like Kevin Love, he's been an abomination from inside the three-point arc.
1 for 10 yesterday.
Correct. Yeah, and it was 0 for 8, I think, in Game 2. I don't know what it was in Game 3. He can't make anything inside. He's having trouble finishing at the rim, but he's putting up huge numbers. And what I like about it from a Cavs perspective is that he's still getting touches and he's still getting shots. And then when he gets them from behind the three-point, and it's not like, oh, my gosh, this is the only time I'm going to get to touch the ball, I have to make this shot. So he's staying involved, staying active. You can just see his confidence level kind of growing, that he feels, I think, finally, and I don't think this was the case prior to the playoffs, even at the end of the regular season, that he truly belongs on this team and that they found a way now to where it's not two of the big three or one of the big three or an alternating two of the big three, but all three of them are playing well and playing well.
How did that come about, Rick?
I have no idea, Bob.
Because everything you're saying is right, but what changed, I wonder?
I have no idea. I think him playing at the five has helped, because he gets some mismatches. I don't know. That's a great question. And I don't know that there's any one answer to it. It just seems now that all of them realize that there's enough shots for all of them as long as the ball keeps moving, keeps snapping, finding energy, as they like to say. That they're all going to get their touches and that they're all capable of putting up 20-plus a night. And, you know, the Cavs fans don't really care how it came about. They're just happy that it came about. And, you know, I don't see any reason really. Go ahead.
The only reason, Rick, that I ask why or how it came about is because I want to know how come it didn't come about sooner. And I just wonder if there wasn't a meeting of the minds, not one of these, you know, players-only closed-door meetings for the whole club, but I just wonder if those three guys, if LeBron pulled Kyrie and Love together, and maybe they just kind of laid everything on the table and grew to trust one another, maybe, and maybe more importantly, that LeBron and Kyrie grew to trust Kevin Love more than they ever expressed before. And because he's playing with a confidence and shooting it.
Yeah.
He shot an air ball yesterday. That was, really a bad one. I mean, it was top of the arc, a little bit off to the right. Mm-hmm. And he shot one, and just a complete. He just tapped his chest like, "Yeah, my bad." Came down, I think, two possessions later and had a corner three. usually when you shoot an air ball, it's, you know, it's kind of hard to cock the next one and fire. And
right.
Just shot it with the same confidence, and I think he made two in a row after that. So I just wonder if there wasn't something that the three of them maybe did together to make this work.
Yeah, I have not heard anything of the like, and I'm one to believe that you can have all the different kind of meetings you want to have, but until you go out there and start doing it, like you said, it's something that I don't know that it should have been this hard for two regular seasons to figure out. But to have been on the court continuously now, which is a little different for them, they have not lost a playoff game when all three of them are on the floor. And maybe that it's just gelled. I don't know. I don't ask why. You just can tell that it's happened. And like I said, I think it's going to continue to happen.
Yeah, and it's something maybe to think about over the course of this next week when you've got to find new stories to write.
Yeah, because there's no basketball. Stories. Yeah, it could be 7 days. It could be nine. Oh, boy.
Crazy. Rick Nolan is our guest, Cavaliers beat writer, talking about the sweep of the Hawks after the sweep of the Pistons and now looking out west. This series in San Antonio, or returns to San Antonio now, just phenomenal. Kevin Durant with just a tour de force performance yesterday. Yeah. He outscored the Spurs by himself in the fourth quarter in a variety of ways. I can't remember the exact stat now about how many of his shots were contested shots, and it didn't matter whether it was from jump shots or at the rim. He was not going to be denied. I got to tell you, I mean, it's only the home court advantage, I guess, that still makes the Spurs the pick here. They got two of the final three in their place. Otherwise, I mean, the Thunder had a chance to win game three, too. They let it slip away in the end. Russell Westbrook made some mistakes in decision-making. But this is a phenomenal series, and I don't even know how it's going to end.
No, I still think the Spurs will survive. I no longer think of the Spurs, though, as a tremendous threat to the Cavs like I did, say, 50 games into this regular season. They just don't seem to have quite the athleticism and young bodies needed, I think, to beat a Cleveland team. The reason I think I'm just still a little skeptical of Oklahoma City, they got great games yesterday from Steven Adams and even Deion Waiters.
Waiters was on fire. Yeah, that's something we haven't seen when he was in Cleveland.
Yeah. What's going to happen, you know, in game five with him, though? You know, is Enes Kanter going to play as well as he did? They're still a team that, you know, two guys can take as many as 65 shots between them. And Westbrook's struggling. He reined it in a little bit yesterday and only took 18, which I think allowed Durant. Yeah,
I mean, he heard the criticism in game three when he took 31. He was 10 of 31.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant, who's still the alpha male there, took only 18 shots. And I think Westbrook made a point of saying, man, I've got to be the point guard here, and I've got to find Kevin. And, of course, Kevin Durant responded.
Yeah, in a best-of-three series, which is what we're down to now, I'll still take the home team. I'll still take the veteran team that's been there 15 times before, a lot of them. And I'll take the team that has multiple weapons and multiple ways to beat you over a team that I think is still unbelievably reliant on two players. You know, if Durant has 30, that game might go another way. Is he going to have to score 41 again for them to win? And can he? You know, he was ridiculous last night.
And even the two-time defensive player of the year, Kawhi Leonard, just looked
helpless.
He couldn't keep up with him. He couldn't stop him no matter what was going on. And that to me, I admit there's a bias here. I like both of those franchises because I like Kevin Durant so much, and I certainly respect everything Pop has done with all of those guys. But I'm just rooting for Oklahoma City for another reason. I think that final, with those two explosive, high-scoring teams, that final in the West would just be really, really entertaining. They played three times in the regular season, and I think Oklahoma City should have won twice. They absolutely had them in the fourth quarter, and then, you know, they broke down or made a critical turnover here or there. But they were three of the best games, and I really, really think that would be a phenomenal seven-game series. And I also think that no matter who plays in that Western Conference final, they're going to beat one another up so bad. Because I don't think the Warriors are going to coast past either one of them, to be quite honest with you, that it might be, it might take a little bit of a toll when it comes time for them to meet the Cavs in the finals.
I still think Golden State's ultimately going to survive. Like you said, though, they might take a little longer to get there than they thought or any of us thought. I haven't. Have you heard? Is Steph going to play tonight?
He's not playing tonight. From what I heard, and it was earlier today, but that Steve Kerr said he's not going to go.
So if he doesn't go, and they lose tonight, all of a sudden they're in a best of three series. He's in his first game back in Game Five, and that pressure after winning 73 games can get way heavier than you ever thought it could when you were winning those 73. I still think they beat Portland. I think they actually beat them tonight, even without Steph. But nothing's given anymore. The Cavs could very well end up playing Oklahoma City in the finals.
Absolutely.
And that's a team they have not had much trouble with over the they play well against them.
Yes, they do.
I still think San Antonio wins that series and loses to Golden State, but. That's part of the fun of this is you wait for it all to play out. The basketball fan in me wants to see Golden State healthy, playing the Cavs healthy, because I think it could be a series for the ages.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Well, I'll be honest with you, though, and I see why. Certainly the defending champions in a rematch of last year's finals, but with different circumstances given the injuries, it could be. I'll be honest with you, though. I think any one of those three series could be one for the ages. I still, despite what I was saying about the Spurs, have a deep, deep respect for how good they are, and I could see them finishing off Oklahoma City and still beating the Warriors. I could also see the reverse, and I could see Westbrook and Durant getting red hot in this run and being there too. And I think any one of the three would be just spectacular against the new wide open, high scoring, long bombing Cavaliers that we're starting to see happen here.
Yeah, would you consider either of those three teams in the West? Would you consider the Cavs a favorite against any of them?
Well, I would probably against Oklahoma City. It might be, and I'm not a Vegas guy, but it might be kind of a pick'em for the Spurs. And I think I can't answer Oklahoma City because they've played now what, five games? Tonight would be six if Steph doesn't go without Steph Curry, and I don't know how that's good. You know what I keep thinking in my head too, Rick, is he going to come back when he does, whether it's tonight or whether it's in game five or what have you, is he going to come back and just be the same explosive self that he always was?
Right.
Or might there be a little Derrick Rose? Remember Rose wanting to come back and wasn't exploding because he just felt, I don't want to turn it again. I don't want to sprain it again. I don't want to do whatever to it again. I just wonder if Steph will be Steph coming back from the sprained knee.
Yeah, remember, too, he's going to have to guard C.J. McCollum or Damian Lillard, too, and he had a lot of trouble doing that in the regular season against Lillard. Going back to who the Cavs would be the favorite, although I think they'd be a clear favorite against Oklahoma City, not to say that the series would be easy. I don't think it would be. I think they'd be a favorite against San Antonio. And to tell you how far I've come, I almost would put Golden State as a pick 'em. And if things continue to go the way they have in Cleveland and Golden State continues to have to muck around a little bit and struggle a little, I might even make them the favorite then. I'm not ready to make that series prediction by any stretch yet, but that's how impressed I am. And granted, they've played Detroit and Atlanta.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's shocked that they're 8-0, even though I picked them in five both series.
So did I.
I'm not shocked that they are 8-0. They could be 12-0. Going into the NBA Finals.
Yeah, and that's why today what I might predict as far as favorite in a hypothetical West or NBA Final to me is just today, because we've seen the Cavaliers play two series. We have not yet seen the two second round series from the potential opponents yet. I got to see how they end up before I would make that call. And then, of course, see what the final looks like, because all of that could very well, the conference finals, that is, because all of that could very well change by the time we get there.
And just like the rest versus rust argument, the Cavs get into the NBA Finals 12-0 and they lose a game, we're all suddenly in the media going to be debating, well, was their road too easy to get to the finals? They weren't tested enough. It's those things you go back and forth on forever, and there's no right or wrong answer until after they play out.
Nice to see that you've already got a column written before we ever get to it.
I got to keep reminding myself that I have to play the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm so looking past that already, and it's unlike me to do that. But, you know, given Miami and Toronto's injury situation now in the middle, the moon and the stars are all lining up for some reason.
That is something that never really happens to Cleveland teams, whether it be Cavaliers, Indians, or Browns. It doesn't really happen much, so they got to enjoy it while they have it. Hey, Rick, really great conversation. We always enjoy it. Thanks so much. Good luck trying to find filler for the next 7 or 9 days until they play again. We'll invite you back on toward the end of the week because I think you and I always come up with something for you to write about.
Sounds good. I need it. I will need it.
I'll be happy to help, my friend. Thank you, Rick.
Okay.
Rick Nolan joining us right here on the Extravaganza. All right, we need to get a timeout very badly. But before we take one, how about we switch from basketball to baseball, Mudhen style? I got a pair of tickets right now. In fact, I got a couple pair. I'll do one now and one later. Tickets for the Mud Hens and Louisville on Wednesday. That's this Wednesday, the 11th, 6:30 p.m. Start time down at 5th Third. If you would like to go to see the Hens in Louisville, be the 10th caller right now to 866-240-1065, and those tickets will be yours right here on the ticket.
Finding Love in the court. Terrific pass. And Kevin Love knocks down a corner three. He gave Irving space, and he has been great from deep. And off James on that drive, pitch to J.R. Smith, who continues his three-point shooting. Channing Frye hits the three from the corner. He has been such a difference in the acquisition from Orlando late in the season. Love comes to the corner. Air ball the last one. All down on this one. And Love's got 2 threes in a row. He switched it here, and Love hits his 4th three. Shumpert out of the corner. And Iman Shumpert makes it 10 three-pointers made again. James hits the three. LeBron's first three-point hit. Schroeder to the basket. James cuts to the basket. He's blocked again. This one's going to be a goaltend.
Oh, boy. Now, that was a very deceptive play.
Shot clock at 2. James Jack. Jumper. Got it. LeBron. Been the hot man. Will he go for the win? Schroeder to the basket. Turned away. James pulls it away. Jump. Ball is called. 8 inches to James, who wins the tap. It goes to the corner. Horford tries to get to it. The three is on the way. Millsap is off. And it's over. And the Cavaliers have swept the Hawks.
I know these guys have been waiting for this opportunity to be in the postseason again after what happened last year, you know, with their injuries. And, you know, so they've been building up towards this, both mentally and physically. And obviously I can't say that I haven't waited for them as well, you know, to get them back to this moment so I could be out there with them. Because it's something that we all envisioned when I came back, when Kev was traded here, and obviously Kyle was already here. So we just, you know, we're in a great rhythm right now as far as us three. You know, we know exactly where we want to be on the floor. We know exactly where we are on the floor. And it's benefited all of us individually. And obviously, it's trickled down to the team.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed an extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks so much
Justin
for joining
Verlander
us.
Justin Verlander on the hill as the Tigers host the Rangers. And check out the kicks Verlander's rocking. Sweet Mother's Day shoes. Fourth inning. Tigers up 2-0. Verlander comes inside on Adrian Beltre. And check out Beltre. Nimble on his feet in the box. And then Andrew Romine doing his best impression of him in the dugout. Later in the inning, Verlander strikes out Prince Fielder, passing Jack Morris for second place on the all-time Tigers strikeout list. He now sits only behind Mickey Lolich. He went 7 innings, 9 Ks. Top of the 8th, Mark Lowe into pitch. Bobby Wilson with bases loaded. Grand slam.
And that, my friends, is why we played the clip for you from Sports Center right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, the Rangers used that Wilson grand slam for an 8-2 propel them to an 8-3 win over the Tigers. And the Tigers are continuing to struggle. And what does that mean? This team that had a 5-game winning streak now followed up by a 6-game losing streak, including 3 straight in Cleveland, then 3 straight against the Rangers. And the wheels are starting to come off a little bit. But then again, it's still only May. They wouldn't really consider firing their manager, would they? That's the talk around Detroit right now. Welcome as we continue into hour number two of the extravaganza. A lot of basketball in the first hour and in the montage, but let's change gears here and shift toward baseball. Why? Because Brad Ausmus is in the crosshairs. At least that's the phrasing that he used. And joining us now to talk about it from MLive.com is Aaron McMahon, who's been covering the Tigers. And he joins us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Aaron, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, Bob. How are you?
Good. So they took you off Pistons beat since the Pistons are done and put you into the press box of the Tigers, huh?
Yes, I'm a busy man.
Well, it's good to be versatile. It's good to have that kind of talent, right, to be able to do both things. I thought it was great. I read your piece today about Brad Ausmus, and he acknowledged his status, as you wrote, as a, quote, lame duck manager. And he said he knows he's in the crosshairs, quote, when you have a payroll like ours, the manager's the guy in the crosshairs, and that's fine. I knew when I took this job I was probably going to get fired before I walked away from it, not this job in particular, but just managing in general. How bright is that spotlight on him now? How close is to the individual with the crosshairs on him to pulling the proverbial trigger?
Well, you know, it's certainly gotten, I guess, larger in the last week or so. You know, the Tigers have lost six straight now. And, you know, and this is a team, like it was mentioned in the piece, that they have, you know, a $200 million payroll. There are high expectations on this team coming into the season. And so far they've floundered a little bit. You know, they've been inconsistent. You know, they'll win a group of games and then they'll lose a bunch of games. And, you know, right now they're in a six game losing streak. And as you can imagine, you know, a lot of the fans here in Detroit aren't happy about it. You know, this is a manager who was in the microscope nonstop last season. You know, the reports, I'm sure you remember late, that he was going to get the axe. Turned out to be, inaccurate, but, you know, Brad, you know, he had to hear all that stuff. So coming into the season, your expectations were high. I mean, I think he realized that. And, you know, and to be fair, he was pretty cool, calm, and collective last night after the meltdown, I guess, from the bullpen. He acknowledges his status. He knows what's going on. And like you said, the only thing really he can do at this point is to move on and continue managing this team. You know, they've got a game tonight. They've got, in fact, on the road for seven straight here in the East Coast. And, you know, this could be the week that, I guess, the pendulum swings one way or another for this team.
You know, Aaron, it's interesting that he stayed cool, calm, and collected, as you point out, but somebody who isn't is Victor, and you wrote a companion story on MLive.com. We're talking to Aaron McMahon from MLive. He usually covers the Pistons, but is working on the Tigers as well. And Victor Martinez is tired of hearing the detractors screaming, "Fire Ausmus," and he said after the game, "He's not the one who went out there and played. It was our fault. It's easy to blame the manager for this and that. We're the ones who have been horse blank." That's leadership. That's leadership from a veteran. He's got his manager's back. He wants the blame. He wants to take the onus. And do you think he kind of speaks for the rest of the clubhouse in that regard?
Yeah, you know, I would say so. And this isn't the first time that Victor's kind of spoken out. You know, I can remember last season where he kind of went at the fans a little bit too when they were, you know, not doing well too. So, you know, Victor's been in these shoes before. He's seen managers come and go. He played under Jim Leyland and the like. But no, I would say that, you know, the players generally, you know, they respect Brad. They like Brad. You know, every player we spoke to yesterday after the game, whether it was Victor, we talked to James McCann, you know, they all have Brad's back, and they all realize, you know, this isn't necessarily on Brad. You know, the bullpen struggled the last two games. The pitching, you know, say for Jordan Zimmerman's been horrendous. I mean, I think they rank 13th in the AL and ERA. They haven't been able to get, you know, good starts on any other, you know, top guys. So it's not, I don't necessarily, you know, peg this on Brad. It's on the pitching at this point. The offense has been inconsistent, and in the last two games, it's been the bullpen.
Yeah, it's really been a little bit of everything, I think, for them, because you're right about the starting pitching, with the exception perhaps of Verlander yesterday. You know, Verlander had a strong start. He shut him out for seven innings. I think that was a very strong quality start, which he promised was coming. He rebounded nicely because he gave up seven runs to the Indians back on Tuesday. And following that, if I remember right, he said something to the effect on Twitter of, "I'm going to dominate soon. I'm close. Doubt me if you want. We'll see." And he did dominate. And the problem is even when you do get a good start from somebody other than Zimmerman, and you're right about that, Zimmerman's ERA is spectacular. The rest of the rotation, we had this last week. It's like, I don't know, five. This was last week, so it got worse over the last couple of losses with the exception of Verlander, but it was around 5, 6, 8 or somewhere in that neighborhood without Zimmerman. But you finally get a good quality start, and then the bullpen lets you down. Or if you do get a good start from a Zimmerman and a good job by the bullpen, there's no offense. It's just something kind of getting in the way almost each and every night out for this team right now, at least during this streak.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, early on, like you mentioned, the Cleveland series, you know, tough starting pitching, couldn't get the offense, and now, you know, last night or yesterday, they got a really good start from Verlander. I didn't say that, you know, it was the best of the season from him. And they only scored two runs. You know, they left the bases loaded two separate times. There were opportunities there for them to score more runs. Now, granted, you know, they took a 2-0 lead in the eighth. You're expected to hold that, or you're supposed to hold that. But yeah, like you said, that's exactly been the story of the season. You know, when one thing goes right, that something else bottoms out, and when bringing this back to Brad, you know, I think he's pushed all the right buttons at this point. I don't know how much more he can do. He's tweaked the lineup at times. He's made all the right bullpen moves that you're supposed to make, in terms of numbers and everything else. He's just, everything hasn't gone right for him, and he's feeling the heat. And I think, you know, rightfully so. I mean, this is a winning business. You're supposed to win games, and with the payroll that they have, I mean, they're supposed to, you know, they're expected to get in the playoffs and make a run here. And right now they find themselves 2 games under 500 and 7 games back in the AL Central early on.
Yeah, and it doesn't help, of course, that the White Sox are red hot. I mean, the White Sox have the second most wins in – how about that? Chicago. Chicago just dominating baseball because the Cubs have a ridiculous 24-6 record. They're playing 800 baseball. And then the White Sox, of course, are at 22-10, so they easily are the two best teams in each league in terms of record anyway. So they got off to such a great start, and the Tigers, for, you know, having the kind of April and May that they've had, their 2 games under 500 – that 7-game gap looks pretty considerable, even though we normally don't start looking at standings, you know, with rare exceptions, if you really are just, you know, wetting the bed badly until around Memorial Day. We don't really care too much about this, but yeah, the gap is widening because the White Sox are playing so well. Now the Indians get hot, and you know, they're in second, you know, 5 back, so you just wonder how patient will Alavila be? How patient will Tigers fans be? Will the crowds get louder and louder if they kind of keep muddling around? Not talking about a 6-game losing streak, but if they continue this poor play in various, not all at the same time, but various levels of the game, pitching, starting pitching, relief pitching, timely hitting, et cetera. You know, you just wonder exactly how loud the crowd, the calls will come, and whether or not Al will pull the trigger on them.
Yep, and don't forget, you know, you've got an owner who's, you know, 80 years old. He's not in exactly the best health, and he's poured a lot of his money in this organization. He wants a World Series, and he hasn't gotten one yet. So he desperately wants one, and he's willing to, you know, do whatever he feels is necessary. So, you know, you've got an owner who's probably, you know, he's at this point, Brad's lifeline is shortening. He's got to win now, or, you know, Mike Ilitch might decide tomorrow, next day, this afternoon, this evening, wherever, that, you know, it's time for Brad to go. And, you know, that, I guess, that remains to be seen.
Well, yeah, you're talking about a $200 million payroll. I mean, and, you know, which used to be only Yankee land. That used to be Yankees and Red Sox territory only. Even though the Tigers were, you know, one of the top 6, 7, eight payrolls in baseball, they weren't pushing up around $200 million the way they are now. But just looking at this year's 2016 Major League Baseball payrolls, the Dodgers are spending $250 million in payroll this year. The Yankees $227 million, the Red Sox $199.8 million. And then the Tigers at 199.5. So I'm going to round up, as we've all been taught in school to do when you get 5 or more. It's $200 million. And there's a reason Mike Ilitch said, go ahead and sign Upton, I'll pay him. There's a reason he said, go ahead and sign Zimmerman, I'll pay him. There was a lot of talk in Detroit and around Tiger circles at the end of last year, Aaron, as I'm sure you realize, and Jim Cushlin, I know you do, because we had these conversations with a number of writers and baseball people last year. There was a lot of talk that after that last place finish that they may just kind of blow it up. Not only trade David Price at the deadline the way they did, but they just may blow it up and kind of do a rebuild. But that Mike Ilitch, given, as you pointed out, Aaron, his health and his age, and wanting that World Series while he still has an opportunity to experience it, that rather than blow it up, he would just spend more. And he spent more. And I guarantee you, this is not what he envisioned for the spending that he gave the green light to in the off season.
No, you're absolutely right. And I guess, you know, it's kind of up to him at this point, you know, how much longer he's willing to wait. You know, he's got a new general manager in Real Avila, but at the same time, you know, Mike's the one with the money and the checkbook and everything else. And, you know, the talent is absolutely there. I mean, that's been made. I mean, I think their bullpen is as strong as it's been in a while.
That's
starting
right.
Pitching, obviously, we all know the names and, you know, the hitters, the hitting is supposed to be there too. So they haven't been able to put it all together at this point. I think at some point everything will come together, but it's just a matter of if, when and how much longer, you know, they're willing to wait.
Jim Cushlin is with us as well. Cush, go ahead, buddy.
And, you know, thinking along those lines, and I know obviously the story is about Ausmus today, Aaron, but, you know, we're mentioning Victor saying how, hey, you know, it's our fault, the players, and this isn't maybe what Mike Ilitch envisioned with his latest investment. Did you think there's any possible moves as we go forward? Well, you know, it's only early May, but those things will come up on us before we know it. Is there anything that they could do move-wise that would help that? Because, you know, I'm more or less right now with Victor. Yeah, it's always, you know, fun for guys like us to, you know, blame the manager or whatever, but the fact is in last week, and they've already had a couple of periods like this so far this season, it's just not clicking and it's not working right. Is there anything move-wise that they may be able to do over the course of the next 2.5 months?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm sure they'll be exploring that. The one hole I see at this point in this Tigers team, and talent-wise and money-wise, you know, they really struggled, you know, with the production of that number five starter. Mike Palfrey's winless, I think he's 0-5. His ERA is north of 6. He's really struggled this year, and he was a question mark coming into the season. This is a guy they signed 2 years, I think $16 million. You know, they may be searching for a number five starter. I don't know how much longer they can wait with him. To Palfrey's credit, you know, he's been honest and open about his poor starts. You know, he's in a way kind of blame himself sometimes. So I, at this point, you know, if they're going to make a move, it's going to be, I think, that, you know, to find a number five, a fifth starter. Besides that, I mean, the bullpen is deeper, I think, than it's been in a while. The hitters are there. I mean, albeit some of them are expensive. But no, I mean, at this point, besides maybe a fifth starter and maybe, you know, a bullpen arm, that's all they can do.
Sorry about that pop-up there. Yeah, we're talking with Aaron McMahon from MLive.com covering the Tigers and talking a little bit about the struggles. They are in a 6-game losing streak, which followed a 5-game winning streak. It started in Cleveland with 3, then lost 3 more to the Rangers just now at home. And you know, Brad Ausmus is, of course, taking some heat. I want to read a little more to both of you guys from what Victor said. I know you know because I'm reading from your article, Aaron, but for our listeners' sake. Victor Martinez had to say. He said, we have a lot of – he called themselves, by the way, horse blank, meaning the players. He said, we are the ones who have been horse blank, saying this has nothing to do with the manager. We're the ones that go out there and play. I don't think it has anything to do with a manager or somebody else. We've got to go out there, stay up, and play better baseball. We have a lot of expectations. You think the fans are going to feel as bad as we feel? With all due respect, I don't think so. We want to go out there and play good baseball. We want to go out there and get an RBI, get a hit. A lot of times that can work against you. And I understand that people spend a lot of money to come watch a baseball game. I understand that and I get it. But if somebody really thinks that we want to go out there and just go through the motions, you're thinking wrong. My question, well, here's the rest of it. It's easy to focus on the manager. It's easy to focus on the manager than focus on 25 guys that we have. There is no secret. We've got to play better baseball. I can't see anything else. Do you think it's a sign of frustration? Well, it's obviously a sign of frustration. That's a dumb question. I hate dumb questions. How frustrated do you really think these guys are that Victor would actually turn his attention to the fans who are booing and calling for Brad Ausmus's heads? That's been one of the cardinal rules that you know, players just don't break. You don't criticize the paying public. You don't criticize the ones who are spending that money that they work for all week long, as he pointed out, to make you a multimillionaire. You just don't do that. You don't turn on the fans. So I guess the better question is, how frustrated do you think the players are that, you know, a seasoned veteran like Victor would find himself drawn into criticizing the fans for calling out the manager?
Well, you know, I don't think they've hit a level that they were last season. You know, last season you saw things kind of, I don't know, say spiral out of control because that's not accurate, but you saw, you know, a dugout spat between Jose Iglesias and James McCann. You know, you saw some guys, you know, they were boiling over with frustration, and it was clear. I don't think you've seen that so much yet this year. But at the same time, you know, Victor did criticize the fans last season. I'm trying to remember what exactly the issue was, but he took a similar stance, you know, questioning the fans and their loyalty and everything else. You know, at the end of the day, I think it really comes down to the fans. You know, if they're not happy with the product, if they're not happy with the manager, the players, whatever that case may be, you know, they can choose not to, you know, not to buy tickets and not to show up. And in essence, that, you know, that takes money out of, you know, Mike Ilitch's pocketbook and everything else. So I, you know, for, you know, Victor has
how close do you obviously think we are? And I'm sorry to interrupt, Aaron, but how close do you think we are to seeing that in Detroit? The fans stop showing up. There's a comment on your webpage, you know, on MLive.com under the story you wrote about Victor that says attendance will start dropping fast. Do you agree with that? Do you think, I mean, you know, right now it's just two games under 500 and it's still early May. Exactly how soon do you think before the attendance starts to drop, which really will get the attention of the owner?
Yeah, no, I mean, if they struggle this week, you know, like I mentioned, they're on a 7-game road trip right now, 3 games at Washington, 4 in Baltimore. You know, if heaven forbid, if they go 0-7 or, you know, 2-5 or whatever the case may be and continue to struggle, I mean, you may see it next week when they return. I mean, granted, they haven't had many sellouts so far this year. You know, they had one, obviously, for opening day, and I think they had one against the Yankees. But, you know, yesterday, it was Mother's Day. It was a beautiful day. It was Sunday afternoon downtown Detroit. You think, you know, fans would want to get out. I think they had about 35,000. It wasn't a sellout. It was close, but it wasn't. So, I think it'll be a while before you see fans totally maybe turn on this team, you know, with so many names and so many superstars on this team, whether, you know, Miguel Cabrera, Justin Verlander. I think the loyalty is there still. You know, you got a lot of people invested with them in terms of buying jerseys and, you know, the good times back in, you know, 06, 07 when they, you know, made the World Series. So I think there's a lot invested there, but none. I think fans right now are it's no secret that they're fed up, they're frustrated and everything else, and should the Tigers continue to lose, I mean, I think you'll see attendance drop.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, you're right about him. This isn't the first time that Victor has criticized the fans and basically told them, hey, pipe down and start supporting us. Don't keep booing. You know, you think we're not upset about it when we make an out. You think we're not upset when we lose. We're more upset than you are because this is our job. It's not the first time he's done this, which really kind of indicates there is a fracture, maybe a little bit, in the confidence of this club, because he's supposed to be one of the more positive, you know, leaders and role models on this baseball team, and obviously a performer as well, which he is. He is performing. Just to the point about Victor Martinez, I think I saw the stat. He's hitting .350 with runners in scoring position, and I think .375 with runners in scoring position with two outs. That's what it is. So he's obviously performing in the clutch, but you can see the frustration is there as he voices it once again at the fans. Aaron McMahon, covering the Detroit Tigers, doing a great job, obviously. The crosshairs are on Brad Ausmus. Victor Martinez doesn't like it. And Aaron, thanks for sharing your thoughts about it with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right, buddy. We appreciate the time. All right, Aaron McMahon joining us from MLive.com. Jim Cushlin here as well. By the way, congratulations to Mike. Is that an L or an I? Is it Seldkamp or Sidekamp?
Seldkamp.
That's an L. Thank you, Jim Cushlin. Mike Seldkamp of Perrysburg was the winner of the Mud Hens tickets. If you would like to go see the Hens, I got another pair for you. Why don't we do that right now? I got a pair for you. It's Wednesday's game against Louisville, 6:30. 6:30 start time, Wednesday, May 11th, literally the day after tomorrow. So we're going to give a second pair away today, and we'll do two more tomorrow. Caller 10, this is your shot at it, 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Caller 10, we'll send you to Fifth Third to see the Mud Hens and Louisville. Also, by the way, coming up after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which we're about to head to, we want to get your calls on any or all of what we've discussed today. If you want to talk about the Tigers and how do you feel as a Tigers fan about Victor Martinez calling you out for expressing your opinion and your point of view loudly and vocally by way of calling for Brad Ausmus to be fired, how do you feel about that? Does it offend you or do you agree with him? It's not his fault, Ausmus's. It's their fault. They're the ones playing the game. All he can do is fill out the lineup card, right? How do you feel about that? If you want to make yourself heard, let's do that at 866-240-1065 as well. And then also, if you want to get back into the NBA playoffs and the way the Cavaliers just rolled through another series, another sweep, we'll get back into that too. So we have a lot still to come right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You were young.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Working our way through a Monday afternoon right here on The Ticket. Thanks so much for joining us. As my voice continues to struggle and suffer, it's not your speakers, it's not your reception, it is all me. Just got a little spring cold going on. And just a little bit rough, so sorry for the raspiness. Thanks very much to our guest, Aaron McMahon from MLive.com, talking a little Tigers with us. If you are a Tigers fan and you've got thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll put you up and on the radio. Do you think Brad Ausmus needs to go? Do you think they need to pull the trigger this early into the season, knowing how much money they spent? They need a better return on the investment of $199 million of Mike Ilitch's dollars than what they're getting. 14-16, a six-game losing streak. You know, this is clearly underperforming based on that roster. But how much of that can Ausmus control? How much of that can anybody else control? Do you think they ought to pull the trigger? If you're a Tigers fan, we'd love to hear from you. 866-240-1065. By the way, congratulations to Aaron Meyer of Perrysburg, who won the tickets to the Mud Hens game tomorrow against Louisville. We give a couple of pairs away today. Not tomorrow. Wednesday. Beg your pardon. Wednesday. Gave a couple pair away today. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Kush, what do you think? You heard some of the arguments and some of the statements made by Victor Martinez, and you heard Aaron McMahon's thoughts on this whole thing. Does Brad Ausmus need to hit the bricks?
No, I don't necessarily think so. I mean, it's always at these types of times, the manager will end up taking a lot of blame, especially in the public. But I agree with Victor Martinez as part of the whole thing. You know, it's on them. I mean, they're the ones who have a fifth starter who, as Aaron pointed out, has an ERA approaching six. I know, he's on my fantasy team, too. I thought it was getting decent filler. They have a bullpen, which should be stronger, and then this weekend decided to revert to the old. I mean, they're losing these games of their own fruition. There's not really a ton of bad moves, blatantly bad kind of moves like we may have seen in playoff time a couple years ago from Brad Ausmus. Now, again, naturally the manager takes the blame, you know, for all this, but this is about the players on the team right now. So I'm more or less on the side of Victor Martinez's comments at this point in time.
You know, it's one thing to say you're on the side of Victor. I don't mean you, but a person to decide Victor's right. It's another thing to say it and the way that he said it. And has done it for a couple of years now, and that is to call out the fans. Instead, I mean, here, let me just give you an example. Admirable, responsible, Victor Martinez saying we're the ones who go out there and play. This has nothing to do with the manager. We've got to go out there and stay up and play better baseball. That's admirable. It's admirable to say this is our fault. We're the ones who have been horse blank. Okay, that's admirable. What's questionable is telling the fans to shut up. And it's, in essence, that's what he's telling the fans. What's questionable is to say, quote, you think the fans are going to feel as bad as we feel? With all due respect, I don't think so. We want to go out there and play good baseball. We want to go out there and get an RBI, get a hit. A lot of times that can work against you. What's questionable is saying, quote, I understand people spend a lot of money to come and watch a baseball game. I understand that and I get it. But if somebody really thinks we want to go out there and just go through the motions, you're thinking wrong. It's the wrong move. It's a bad look to go out there and complain, or let me rephrase, to criticize some fans who are complaining that their dollars are the ones being spent by Mike Ilitch. They're the ones who buy the tickets. They're the ones who buy the products that are advertised on the baseball games that are televised and on the radio, et cetera, which put money into the pockets of the owners and you know, that, of course, fund the whole thing. And right now, they have the third worst team ERA in the American League at 4.42. That's big. And for the fans to be frustrated by that performance, you know, you're right, Victor. They're not going to be able to fire 25 players. The only thing they can do is say we need somebody who's a better leader potentially. And I'm not jumping on that bandwagon. I'm just saying from the fans who are screaming to fire Ausmus, they want a potential leader who can get more out of $199 million payroll than what he is, is able to get out of them right now. I just think it's a bad look for Victor and for any player, to be honest with you, to criticize Joe and Jane Lunchbox, the true victims in all of this, the ones who spend their hard-earned dollars. They get that paycheck every Friday or every other Friday, and they got to spend X on housing and X on cars and X on utility bills and food and clothing and health insurance and everything else, and they try to set money aside to give to the Tigers, to give to Mike Ilitch. And all they expect in return is something worthy of that investment, and they're not getting it, and they're really, really frustrated by it. I just don't think you should turn your attention on the fans the way that the Victor just did.
And that's an obvious point. I mean, on that front, the implying that the fans, quit it, that is kind of a wrong move. And the fans are going to say what they will, in these situations, especially when a team is not playing so well. I mean, that's obvious. That's always been. Yeah, at the same time, though, and this is why I asked the question to Aaron when I did, because, okay, if it's not the manager, then what are they going to do? Because I don't think Mike Pelfrey, for example, is going to suddenly start turning into Jordan Zimmerman Part 2. I don't think that's going to happen. Technically speaking, you got to worry about the bullpen still all the time, I think, even though they should, and for the most part, have been better so far this year than in the past. So it's kind of a player kind of thing at this point. But, yeah, calling out the fans in a way, even if it's subtle, is not really the way to go about it. It's just going to, make more bad blood. And to the manager part in general, because a lot of Tigers fans have been extra critical of Ausmus from the get-go. Because in many ways, the thought was, okay, you're replacing a great manager over the course of time, not just with the Tigers and Jim Leland, and you're basically giving it to you're basically giving this team whose window is open right now to go deep in the playoffs, two World Series, and you're giving it to a rookie manager. And I know to a certain degree, some Tigers fans, that still to this day hasn't sat well with them. They would have preferred a more veteran guy, in the first place. So that's just going to mean normal managers are going to get their criticism. It means Ausmus is going to get more when the chips are down, because I still believe there's a contingent of Tigers fans, I think in the minority, but a contingent who still to this day feel that they never should have hired Ausmus in the first place.
Yeah, there's no doubt that is the case. There are a lot of people who are just going to be frustrated that that Leland was replaced by a guy with little to no experience, and you're right, they wanted somebody like Leland. I get all of that. The problem is acknowledging what they're saying and blaming them for saying it, which Victor is doing, is going to create nothing but negative atmospheres at the ballpark. What do you think is going to happen when he says, "Hey fans, I know you pay a lot of money to go to the games, but if you don't think we're trying out here, then you don't know what you're talking about." That's not going to get anybody cheering for the big hit. It's going to get people booing him, and it's going to be the kind of thing that weighs on you, the kind of thing that hangs over you until, of course, what? Winning. Winning cures all ills. Winning, yep. Winning heals all hurt feelings and all of that nonsense. So, Victor just has to be careful here that he doesn't make a bad situation from the fans
right
into something worse.
No, and you're absolutely right on that. And then, to another degree, I mean, this is a team that now has lost six in a row right now. They're under 500 again. We know what they did last year. And then the year before that did go to the playoffs and the bullpen imploded despite some of the stars on this team. Your Verlanders, your Miguel Cabreras, your Jordan Zimmerman's now brought in. One has to start beginning to wonder if this whole plan is going to be working. I mean, we've seen teams in the past spend boatloads of money and it not work at all. And it's been 4 years or 3 years now plus since the Tigers got past round one of the playoff with a lot of this same core.
Yeah, look at the Yankees.
They're in last place right now.
They're $225 million, $227 million. I think I said it was second to the Dodgers, who were $253 million this year, and they're last place. That is exactly right. So, the key to winning championships isn't always outspending the rest of the competition. I mean, look who's running away right now in the National League. Look who's running away, quite frankly, with baseball. It's the third best record through 30 games ever. And according to what Mike and Mike said earlier this morning, the other two teams that had the best record through 30 games went on to win the World Series. And, of course, if the Cubs can do that, breaking the curse, my goodness. But they're not just beating teams. It's not just that they're 24-6. It's that they're beating teams badly. They have a run differential of 102 in 30 games. The other two teams had an average of 85, plus 85 in a run differential. They're at 102. So what they're doing is just ridiculous. And what is their payroll?
Looking that up right now, because one thing I want to say is if you're comparing this to the Cubs, well, the Cubs do, I know, have some younger guys, because when Theo Epstein, the former Red Sox guy, you know, took over, he traded some guys away and was trying to build more of a plan. Now, they do have $171 million payroll. Lester and Hayward and Lackey are veterans. They have Ben Zobrist in there. Jake Arrieta, $10 million, but then there's a lot of guys. Your Anthony Rizzo, for example, he's making 5.285 because he's a young guy who's not even free agent eligible for about five more years. So they sprinkled around the rest of the roster after some their couple of other higher paid veterans like your Lesters and your Lackeys and guys like that. And the rest of it is some of these guys that they've been bringing up in the moves that Epstein has made since taking over the team a couple years ago. And this is the kind of thing that Red Sox, I'm thinking of where he used to be, that Cubs fans have been waiting for him to do ever since he took over. Well, the Tigers don't have that. How many times have we talked about if the Tigers are going to make the move, the flip side of that argument is, well, who are they going to trade away? Because they don't have anybody that teams would want at this point. They gave all their best guys away already.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. I don't know where you got your 171. I'm just looking at the International Business Times, and I've seen a couple of other ones that seem to corroborate it. But they've got, you remember I told you the Tigers were at 199.5. They've got the Cubs at 167.4 in terms of millions, which is good for sixth, trailing the Giants at 171. Then the Tigers, like I said, are fourth at 199. For the sake of comparison, the Indians, who have swept the Tigers two straight series now.
That still seems weird to say.
I know. Six straight, right, to start the season against the Tigers. The Indians are the 23rd highest payroll in baseball with $98 million. Literally $101 million less in salary on the field.
Or spend it another way. Some of those Cubs guys I was just reading off, they have six guys at $10 million or more in terms of their salary for this year alone. Highest paid Indian is Carlos Santana at 8.4.
There you go. And that's an example. So anyway, sometimes spending works, obviously, and sometimes it just doesn't. And the Yankees are a prime example of that, and quite frankly, so are the Tigers right now. All right, I'm going to get a quick timeout here because I know we're running short on time, but I want to get a quick timeout and then come back and talk about a great, great matchup, one of the great matchups you're going to see among two position rivals starting tonight and over the next 3 days as we continue right here on The Ticket.
It's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we wrap it up, very close to wrapping it up anyway. Drive Time with Mike Miller coming your way at 5 o'clock right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for tuning into the Extravaganza today. Since we're on the baseball kick and we spent the last 45 minutes talking about the Tigers and their struggles, let's talk a little bit about a very, very interesting matchup tonight down in Houston. How about the Indians and the Astros and the battle between two of the great young shortstops in all of Major League Baseball, Kush? And going back to last year, there was a debate who should have been the American League's Rookie of the Year.
Right,
Carlos
I remember
Correa.
That.
Carlos Correa of the Astros ended up winning the award, and he came up a little bit earlier than Lindor did and put up a little more power numbers, if memory serves. I don't have each of their slash lines or anything in front of me, but I do know this, that Francisco Lindor, who was supposed to have been great glove and just modest but adequate bat,
right,
when he was, you know, proclaimed to be one of the top prospects in all of baseball when he was at the double and triple A level, came up last year and blew everybody's mind with not only that glove, but his bat, hitting well over 300 and becoming just an extraordinarily clutch hitter. So anybody expecting a sophomore slump, sorry to disappoint, Francisco Lindor is still riding high. In fact, he's hitting .433 over his last eight games, and on the season, .324 with two home runs and 12 RBIs. Compare that to Carlos Correa, the reigning American League Rookie of the Year, who is, by the way, still tremendous, but he's down under .300. So this is the first matchup of the year between these two tremendous shortstops, And I asked the question last year, and I'll ask it again now as we see them for the first time against one another. By the way, Corey Kluber on the hill for the Indians, who threw a complete game shutout at the Tigers last week. I'll ask it again today. Who would you rather have if you could pick one of those two guys to start your club? Kush, in 10 seconds, would you take Lindor or the defending with the guy with a little more pop? Would you take Correa?
Obviously, my local bias is probably going to show in the answer, but I would take Lindor. I'm amazed at what he's been able to do with the bat, because I sure as heck didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't either. I'm amazed, and he continues to get better and better. Tomorrow, of course, we'll have a report on that game and talk a little bit more about how that showdown goes. Again, Corey Kluber, by the way, and that's the difference, too. Correa's got a hit off Kluber, who is in a groove right now, so we'll see what happens tonight. Hey, that's all the time we've got, as promised. Again, sorry for any raspiness that might be a little bit tough to listen to. I'll do my best to get the voice better by tomorrow. But the golden tones of Mike Miller are coming up next on Drive Time right here on The Ticket.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.